Shaking his head at the way of the world, Fred Colon walked right up to the wall so cruelly or cruelier, denuded of its covering. The painting had been crudely cut from its frame. Sergeant Colon was not a high-speed thinker, but that point struck him as odd. If you've got a month to pinch a painting, why botch the job? Fred had a copper's view of humanity that differed in some respects from that of the curator. Never say that people wouldn't do something, no matter how strange it was. Probably there were some mad rich people out there who would buy the painting, even if it meant only ever viewing it in the privacy of their own mansion. People could be like that. In fact, knowing that this was their big secret probably gave them a lovely, tight little shiver inside. But the thieves had slashed the painting out as if they didn't care about making a sale. There were several ragged inches all along the... Just a moment. Fred stood back. A clue. There it was, right there. He got the lovely, tight little shiver inside. This painting, he declared, this painting which isn't here, I mean obviously, was stolen by a troll.
My goodness, how can you tell? Said Sir Reynold.
I'm very glad you asked me that question, sir, said Fred Colon, who was. I have detected, you see, that the top of the circular mural was cut really close to the frame, he pointed. Now, your troll would easily be able to reach up with his knife, Ray, and cut along the edge of the frame at the top and down a bit on each side, see? But your average troll don't bend that well, so when it came to cutting along the bottom, Ray, he made a bit of a mess of the job and left it all jagged. Plus, only a troll could carry it away. A stair carpet's bad enough, and a rolled-up mural would be a lot heavier than that, he beamed.
Well done, Sergeant, said the curator.
Good thinking, Fred, said Nobby.
"Thank you, Corporal," said Fred Colon generously.
"Or it could have been a couple of dwarfs with a stepladder," Nobby went on cheerfully. "The decorators have left a few behind. They're all over the place,"
Fred Colon sighed.
"You see, Nobby," he said, "it's comments like that, made in front of a member of the public, that are the reason why I'm a sergeant and you ain't. If it was dwarfs, it would be neat all round, obviously. Is this place locked up at night, Mr. Sir Reynold?"
"Of course." Not just locked, but barred. Old John is meticulous about it, and he lives in the attic, so he can make this place like a fortress.
This would be the caretaker, said Fred. We'll need to talk to him.
Certainly you may, said Sir Reynold nervously. Now, I think we may have some details about the painting in our storeroom. I'll just go and find them.
He hurried off towards a small doorway.
I wonder how they got it out, said Nobby, when they were alone.
Who says they did? Said Fred Colon. Big place like this, full of attics and cellars and odd corners, well, why not stash it away and wait a while? You get in as a customer one day, see, hide under a sheet, take out the mural in the night, hide it somewhere, then go out with the customers next day.
Simple, eh?
He beamed at Nobby.
You've got to outsmart the criminal main, see?
Or they could have just smashed down a door and pushed off with the mural in the middle of the night, said Nobby. Why mess about with a cunning plan when a simple one will do?
Fred sighed.
I can see this is going to be a complicated case, Nobby.
You should ask Vimesy if we can have it then, said Nobby. I mean, we already know the facts, right?
Hovering in the air, unsaid was, where would you like to be in the next few days? Out there where the axes and clubs are likely to be flying, or in here, searching all the attics and cellars very, very carefully? Think about it. And it wouldn't be cowardice, right? Because a famous mural like this is bound to be part of our national heritage, right? Even if it is just a painting of a load of dwarfs and trolls having a scrap.
I think I will do a proper report and suggest to Mr. Vames that maybe we should handle this one, said Fred Colon slowly. It needs the attention of mature officers. Do you know much about art, Nobby?
If necessary, Sarge.
Oh, come on, Nobby.
What? Tawnee says what she does is art, Sarge, and she wears more clothes than a lot of the women on the walls round here, so why be sniffy about it?
Yep, but... Fred Colon hesitated here.
He knew in his heart that spinning upside down around a pole wearing a costume you could floss with definitely was not art, and being painted lying on a bed wearing nothing but a smile and a small bunch of grapes was good solid art, but putting your finger on why this was the case was a bit tricky.
No urns, he said at last.
"What urns?" said Nobby.
"Nude women are only art if there's an urn in it," said Fred Colon.
This sounded a bit weak even to him, so he added,
"Or a plinth. Both is best, of course.
It's a secret saying, see, that they put in to say that it's art and okay to look at. What about a potted plant? That's okay if it's in an urn. What about if it's not got an urn or a plinth or a potted plant, said Nobby.
Have you one in mind, Nobby? Said Colon suspiciously.
Yeah, the goddess Anoia arising from the cutlery, said Nobby.
Anoia is the Ankh-Morpork goddess of things that get stuck in drawers.
They've got it here. It was painted by a bloke with three eyes in his name, which sounds pretty artistic to me.
The number of eyes is important, Nobby, said Sergeant Colon gravely, but in these situations you have to ask yourself, where's the cherub? If there's a little fat pink kid holding a mirror or a fan or similar, then it's still okay, even if he's grinning. Obviously you can't get urns everywhere.
All right, but supposing, Nobby began.
The distant door opened, and Sir Reynold came hurrying across the marble floor with a book under his arm.
"Ah, I'm afraid there is no copy of the painting," he said. "Clearly, a copy that did it justice would be quite hard to make, but this rather sensationalist treatise has many detailed sketches, at least. These days, every visitor seems to have a copy, of course. Did you know that more than 2,490 individual dwarfs and trolls can be identified by armour or body markings in the original picture? It drove Rascal quite mad, poor fellow. It took him 16 years to complete.
That's nothing, said Nobby cheerfully. Freddy hasn't finished painting his kitchen yet, and he started 20 years ago.
Thank you for that, Nobby, said Colon coldly.
He took the book from the curator. The title was the Coombe Valley Codex.
"Mad Hull," he said.
"Well, he neglected his other work, you see. He was constantly moving his lodgings because he couldn't pay the rent, and he had to drag that huge canvas with him. Imagine, he had to beg for paints in the street, which took up a lot of his time, since not many people have a tube of burnt umber on them. He said it talked to him, too. You'll find it all in there. Rather dramatized, I fear."
"The painting talked to him?"
Sir Reynold made a face.
"We believe that's what he meant. We don't really know. He did not have many friends. He was convinced that if he went to sleep at night, he would turn into a chicken. He'd leave little notes for himself saying, 'You are not a chicken,' although sometimes he thought he was lying. The general belief is that he concentrated so much on the painting that it gave him some kind of brain fever. Towards the end, he was sure he was losing his mind. He said he could hear the battle."
"How do you know that, sir?" said Fred Colon. "You said he didn't have any friends."
"Ah, the incisive intellect of the policeman," said Sir Reynold, smiling.
"He left notes to himself, Sergeant, all the time. When his last landlady entered his room, she found many hundreds of them, stuffed in old chicken feed sacks. Fortunately, she couldn't read, and since she'd fixed in her mind the idea that the lodger was some sort of genius and therefore might have something she could sell, she called a neighbour, a Miss Adelina Happily, who painted watercolours, and Miss Happily called a friend who framed pictures, who hurriedly summoned Ephraim Douster, the noted landscape artist. And scholars have puzzled over the notes ever since, seeking some insight into the poor man's tortured mind. They are not in order, you see. Some are very odd."
"Odder than you are not a chicken," said Fred.
"Yes," said Sir Reynold. "No, there is stuff about voices, omens, ghost. He also wrote his journal on random pieces of paper, you know, and never gave any indication as to the date or where he was staying in case the chicken found him. And he used very guarded language because he didn't want the chicken to find out."
"Sorry, I thought you said he thought he was the chick—" Colon began.
"Who can fathom the thought process of this sadly disturbed sergeant?" said Sir Reynold wearily.
"And does the painting talk?" said Nobby Nobbs. "Stranger things have happened, right?"
"Aha, no," said Sir Reynold. "At least not in my time. Ever since that book was reprinted, there's been a guard in here during visiting hours, and he says it has never uttered a word. Certainly, it has always fascinated people, and there have always been stories about hidden treasure there. That is why the book has been republished. People love a Mr. Rear, don't they?"
"Not us," said Fred Colon.
"I don't even know what a Mr. Rear is," said Nobby, leafing through the codex. "Here, I heard about this book. My friend Dave, who runs the stamp shop, says there's this story about a dwarf, right, who turned up in this town near Coombe Valley more than 2 weeks after the battle, and he was all injured because he'd been ambushed by trolls and starving, right, and no one knew much dwarfish, but it was like he wanted them to follow him, and he kept saying his word over and over again, which turned out, right, to be dwarfish for treasure, right? Only when they followed him back to the valley, right, he died on the way and they never found nothing. And then this artist bloke found some thing in Coombe Valley and hid the place where he'd found it in his painting. But it drove him bananas, like it was haunted, Dave said. He said the government hushed it up.
Yeah, but your mate Dave says the government always hushes things up, Nobby, said Fred.
Well, they do,
except he always gets to hear about them, and he never gets hushed up, said Fred.
I know you like to point a finger of scoff, Sarge, but there's a lot goes on that we don't know about.
Like what exactly? Colon retorted. Name me one thing that's going on that you don't know about. There, you can't, can you? Sir Reynold cleared his throat.
That is certainly one of the theories, he said, speaking carefully, as people tended to after hearing the Colon Knob's brains trust crossing purposes. Regrettably, Methodia Rascal's notes support just about any theory one may prefer. The current popularity of the painting is, I suspect, because the book does indeed revisit the old story that there's some huge secret hidden in the painting.
Oh, said Fred Colon, perking up. What kind of secret?
I have no idea. The landscape was painted in great detail. A pointer to a secret cave, perhaps? Something about the positioning of some of the combatants? There are all kinds of theories. Rather strange people come along with tape measures and rather worryingly intent expressions, but I don't think they ever find anything.
Perhaps one of them pinched it, Nobby suggested.
I doubt it. They tend to be rather furtive individuals who bring sandwiches and a flask and stay here all day. The sort of people who love anagrams and secret signs, and have little theories and pimples. Probably quite harmless except one another. Besides, why steal it? We like people to take an interest in it. I don't think that kind of person would want to take it home, because it would be too large to fit under the bed. Did you know that Rascal wrote that sometimes in the night he heard screams? The noise of battle one is forced to assume so sad.
"'Not something you'd want over the fireplace, then,' said Fred Colon.
"'Precisely, Sergeant, even if it were possible to have a fireplace 50 feet long.
"'Thank you, sir. One other thing, though. How many doors are there into this place?'
"'Three,' said Sir Reynold promptly. "'But two are always locked.
"'But if the troll, or the dwarfs,' said Nobby, "'or, as my junior colleague points out, the dwarfs, try to get it out,'
"'Gargoyles,' said Sir Reynold proudly. "'Two watch the main door constantly from the building opposite, "'and there's one each on the other doors, "'and there are staff on during the day, of course.
"'This may sound a silly question, sir, "'but have you looked everywhere?'
"'I've had the staff searching all morning, Sergeant. "'It would be a very big and very heavy role. "'This place is full of odd corners, "'but it would be very obvious.'
"'Colon saluted. "'Thank you, sir. We'll just have a look around, if you don't mind.'
"'Yeah, for urns,' said Nobby Nobbs.
Vimes eased himself into his chair and looked at the damned vampire. She could have passed for 16. It was certainly hard to believe that she was not a lot younger than Vimes. She had short hair, which Vimes had never seen on a vampire before, and looked, if not like a boy, then like a girl who wouldn't mind passing for one.
"'Sorry about the remark down there,' he said. "'It's not been a good week, and it's getting worse by the hour.'
"'You don't have to be frightened,' said Sally. "'If it's any help, I don't like this any more than you do.'
"'I'm not frightened,' said Vimes, sharply.
"'Sorry, Mr. Vimes. You smell frightened. Not badly,' Sally added, "'but just a bit. And your heart is beating faster. I'm sorry if I have offended. I was just trying to put you at your ease.'
Vimes leaned back.
"'Don't try to put me at my ease, Miss von Humperdinck,' he said. "'It makes me nervous when people do that. "'It's not as though I have any ease to be put at. "'And do not comment on my smell either, thank you. "'Oh, and it's Commander Vimes, or Sir, understand, not Mr. Vimes.'
"'And I would prefer to be called Sally,' said the vampire.
"'They looked at each other, both aware that this was not going well, "'both uncertain that they could make it go any better.
"'So—' "'Sally, you want to be a copper,' said Vimes.
"'A policeman, yes.
"'Any history of policing in your family?' said Vimes. It was a standard opening question. It always helped that they'd inherited some idea about coppering. "'No, just the throat-biting,' said Sally. There was another pause. Vimes sighed. "'Look, I just want to know one thing,' he said. "'Did John Not-a-Vampire-at-All Smith and Doreen Winkings put you up to this?' "'No,' said Sally. "'I approached them. And if it's any help to you, I didn't think there'd be all this fuss either.' Vimes looked surprised. "'But you applied to join,' he said. "'Yes, but I don't see why there has to be all this interest.' "'Don't blame me. That was your League of Temperance. Really. Your Lord Veterinari was quoted in the newspaper,' said Sally. "'All that stuff about the lack of species discrimination being in the finest traditions of the watch.' "'Ha!' said Vimes. "'Well, it's true that a copper's a copper as far as I'm concerned.' But the fine traditions of the watch, Miss von Humperdinck, largely consist of finding somewhere out of the rain, mumping for free beer and the backs of pubs, and always keeping two notebooks. "'You don't want me, then?' said Sally. "'I thought you needed all the recruits you could get. Look, I'm probably stronger than anyone on your payroll who isn't a troll. I'm quite clever. I don't mind hard work, and I've got excellent night vision. I can be useful. I want to be useful. Can you turn into a bat?' She looked shocked. "'What? What kind of a question is that to ask me?' "'Probably among the less tricky ones,' said Vimes. "'Besides, it might be useful, can you?' "'No.' "'Oh, well, never mind. I can turn into a lot of bats,' said Sally. "'One bat is hard to do because you have to deal with changes in body mass, and you can't do that if you've been reformed for a while. Anyway, it gives me a headache. What was your last job?' "'I didn't have one. I was a musician.' Vimes brightened up. "'Really? Some of the lads have been talking about setting up a watch band. Could they use a cello?' "'Probably not.' Vimes drummed his fingers on the desk. Well, she hadn't gone for his throat yet, had she? That was the problem, of course. Vampires were fine right up until the point where suddenly they weren't. But in truth, right now, he knew she'd got it right. He needed anyone who could stand upright and finish a sentence. This damn business was taking its toll. He needed men out there all the time, just to keep the lid on things. Oh, right now it was just scuffles and stone-throwing and breaking windows and running away, but all that stuff added up, like snowflakes on an avalanche slope. People needed to see coppers at a time like this. They gave the illusion that the whole world hadn't gone insane. And the Temperance League were pretty good and very supportive of their members. It was in the interests of all members that no one found themselves standing in a strange bedroom with an embarrassingly full feeling. They'd be watching her. "'We've got no room for passengers in the watch,' he said. "'We're too pressed right now to give you any more than what is laughingly known as on-the-job training, but you'll be on the streets from day one. How are you with the daylight thing?' "'I'm fine with long sleeves and a wide brim. I carry the kit anyway.' Vimes nodded. A small dustpan and brush, a file of animal blood, and a card saying, "'Help, I have crumbled and I can't get up.' Please sweep me into a heap and crush file. I'm a black ribboner and will not harm you, thanking you in advance. His fingers rattled on the desktop again. She returned his stare. All right, you're in, Vimes said at last. On probation to start with. Everyone starts that way. Sort out the paperwork with Sergeant Littlebottom downstairs, report to Sergeant Detritus for your gear and orientation lecture, and try not to laugh. And now you've got what you want. "'And we're not being official. Tell me why.' "'Pardon?' said Sally. "'A vampire wanted to be a copper?' said Vimes, leaning back in his chair. "'I can't quite make that fit. Sally.' "'I thought it would be an interesting job in the fresh air, "'which would offer opportunities to help people, Commander Vimes.' "'Hmm,' said Vimes. "'If you could say that without smiling, you might make a copper after all. "'Welcome to the job, Lance Constable. I hope you have—' The door slammed. Captain Carrot took two steps into the room, saw Sally, and hesitated. "'Lance Constable von Humperdinck has just joined us, Captain,' said Vimes.
Fine. Hello, miss,' said Carrot quickly. "'Sir, someone's killed Hamcrusher.'
Ankh-Morpork's finest strolled back down towards the yard.
"'What I do,' said Nobby, "'is cut the painting up into little bits, like, oh, a few inches across.'
"'That's diamonds, Nobby.' That's how you get rid of stolen diamonds.
All right, and how about this one? You cut the mural up into bits the size of ordinary paintings, OK? Then you paint a painting on the other side of each one and put them in frames and leave them around the place. No one will notice the extra paintings, right? And then you can go and pinch them when the fuss has died down.
And how do you get them out, Nobby?
Well, first you get some glue and a really long stick and...
Fred Colon shook his head.
Can't see it happening, Nobby.
All right, then. You get some paint that's the same colour as the walls, and you glue the painting to the wall somewhere it'll fit, and you paint over it with your wall paint so it looks just like the wall.
Got a convenient bit of wall in Maine, then?
How about the inside the frame that's there already, Sarge?
Bloody hell, Nobby, that's clever, said Fred, stopping dead.
Thank you, Sarge. That means a lot coming from you.
But you've still got to get it out, Nobby.
Remember all those dust sheets, Sarge? I bet in a few weeks' time a couple of blokes in overalls will be able to walk out of the place with a big white roll under their arms, and no one would think twice about it, cos they'd, like, be thinking the mural had been pinched weeks before.
There were a few moments of silence before Sergeant Colon said, in a hushed voice, "That's a very dangerous mind you got there, Nobby, very dangerous indeed. How'd you get the new paint off, though?"
"Oh, that's easy," said Nobby. "And I know where to get some painter's aprons, too."
"Nobby?" said Fred, shocked.
"All right, Sarge. You can't blame a man for dreaming, though."
"This could be a feather in our caps, Nobby. And we could do with one now."
"Your water playing up again, Sarge?"
"You may laugh, Nobby, but you've only got to look around," said Fred gloomily. "It's just gang fights now. It's going to get worse, you mark my words. All this scrapping over something that happened thousands of years ago. I don't know why they don't go back to where they came from if they want to do that."
"Most of them come from round here now," said Nobby.
Fred grunted his disdain for a mere fact of geography. "War, Nobby. Ha! What is it good for?" he said.
"Dunno, Sarge. Freeing slaves, maybe?"
Well, okay.
"Defending yourself from a totalitarian aggressor?"
"All right, I'll grant you that, but..."
"Saving civilization against a horde of..."
"It doesn't do any good in the long run, is what I'm saying, Nobby, if you'd listened for 5 seconds together," said Fred Colon sharply.
"Yeah, but in the long run, what does, Sarge?"
"Say that again, paying attention to every word, will you?" said Vimes.
"He's dead, sir. Ham-Crusher is dead. The dwarfs are sure of it."
Vimes stared at his captain. Then he glanced at Sally and said, "I gave you an order, Lance Constable Humperdinck. Go and get joined up." When the girl had hurried out, he said, "I hope you're sure about it as well, Captain. It's spreading through the dwarfs like, Carrot began.
"Alcohol?"
Vimes suggested.
"Very fast anyway," Carrot conceded. "Last night, they say, a troll got into his place in Treacle Street and beat him to death. I heard some of the lads talking about it."
"Carrot, wouldn't we know if something like that had happened?" said Vimes. But in the theatre of his mind, Angua and Fred Colon uttered their Cassandraic warnings again. The dwarfs knew something. The dwarfs were worried.
"Don't we, sir?" said Carrot. "I mean, I've just told you."
"I mean, why aren't his people shouting it in the streets? Political assassination and all that sort of thing? Shouldn't they be screaming bloody murder? Who told you this?"
"Constable Ironbender and Corporal Ringfounder, sir. They're steady lads. Ringfounder's up for sergeant soon."
There was something else, sir. I did ask them why we hadn't heard it officially, and Ironbender said..."
"You won't like this, sir. He said the watch wasn't to be told."
Carrot watched Vimes carefully. It was hard to see the change of expression on the commander's face, but certain small muscles set firmly.
"On whose orders?" said Vimes.
"Someone called Ardent, apparently. He's Ham-Crusher's interpreter, I suppose you could say. He says it's dwarf business."
"But this is Ankh-Morpork, Captain, and murder is murder."
"Yes, sir."
"And we are the city watch," Vimes went on. "It says so on the door."
"Actually, it mostly says coppers are bastards on the door at the moment, but I've got someone scrubbing it off," said Carrot.
"And that means if anyone gets murdered, we're responsible," said Vimes.
"I know what you mean, sir," said Carrot carefully.
"Does Vetinari know?"
"I can't imagine that he doesn't."
"Me neither."
Vimes thought for a moment.
"What about the Times? There's plenty of dwarfs working there."
"I'd be surprised if they passed it on to humans, sir. I only got to hear about it because I'm a dwarf and Ringfounder really wants to make sergeant, and, frankly, I overheard them. But I doubt if the printing dwarfs would mention it to the editor."
"Are you telling me, Captain, that dwarfs in the watch would keep murder secret?"
Carrot looked shocked.
"Oh, no, sir."
"Good.
They just keep it secret from humans. Sorry, sir."
The important thing is not to shout at this point, Vimes told himself. Do not, what they call it, go spare. Treat this as a learning exercise. Find out why the world is not as you thought it was. Assemble the facts. Digest the information. Consider the implications. Then go spare, but with precision. Dwarfs have always been law-abiding citizens, Captain, he said. They even pay their taxes. Suddenly they think it's okay not to report a possible murder. Carrot could see the steely glint in Vimes's eyes. Well, the fact is, he began, yes. You see, Ham Crusher is a deep-down dwarf, sir. I mean, really deep down. Hates coming to the surface. They say he lives at sub-sub-basement level. I know all that, so... So how far down does our jurisdiction go, sir? Said Carrot. What? As far down as we like. Does it say that anywhere, sir? Most of the dwarfs here are from Copperhead and Llamedos and Uberwald, said Carrot. Those places have surface laws and underground laws. I know it's not the same here, but, well, it's how they see the world. And, of course, Ham Crusher's dwarfs are all deep-downers, and you know how ordinary dwarfs think about them. They come bloody close to worshipping them, Vimes thought, pinching the bridge of his nose and shutting his eyes. It just gets worse and worse. All right, he said. But this is Ankh-Morpork, and we have our own laws. There can be no harm in us just checking up on the health of Brother Ham Crusher, can there? We can knock on the door, can't we? Say we've got good reason to ask? I know it's only a rumour, but if enough people believe a rumour like that, we will not be able to keep the lid on it. Good idea, sir. Go and tell Angua I want her along, and... Oh, Haddock. And Ringfounder, maybe. You come too, of course. Not a good idea, sir. I happen to know most deep downers are nervous about me. They believe I'm too human to be a dwarf. Really? 6 feet 3 inches in his stockinged feet, thought Vimes. Adopted and raised by dwarfs in a little dwarf mine in the mountains. His dwarfish name is Khazad Bat, which means headbanger. He coughed. Why on earth should they think that, I wonder, he said. All right, I know I'm technically human, sir, but size has traditionally never been a dwarfish definition of a dwarf. Ham Crusher's group aren't happy about me, though. Sorry to hear it. I'll take Cheery, then. Are you mad, sir? You know what they think about female dwarfs who actually admit it? All right, then I'll take Sergeant Detritus. They'll believe in him, all right, won't they? Could be said to be a bit provocative, sir, Carrot began doubtfully. Detritus is an Ankh-Morpork copper captain, just like you and me, said Vimes. I suppose I'm acceptable, am I? Yes, sir, of course. I think you worry them, though. I do? Oh, Vimes hesitated. Well, that's good. And Detritus is an officer of the law. We've still got some law here, and as far as I'm concerned, it goes deep. All the way down.